The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
A lot happened since we met yesterday. FBI Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, otherwise known as Andy. Yeah, wasn't that the kid who owned the cowboy too in the Pixar movie? I think. Yeah, he had Andy on his boot. I don't know what Andy has on his boot, but that's a different story. Andy is the guy who was referred to in the text of the insurance policy. Remember that between Strzok and Page? He's now leaving the bureau. Now, there's a lot of people say, this is no big deal. Yeah, it really is. It really is. McCabe's ouster comes the same day his boss, Director Wray, reviewed the classified memo prepared by the House Intelligence Committee, which we'll get to in a little while. Some congressmen are even saying that the memo shows KGB-like behavior on behalf of the FBI. Others say it shows evidence that the controversial Steele dossier was used as the excuse by the FBI to get the FISA warrant to spy on the Trump campaign. For a refresher here, the Steele dossier was financed by the DNC and the Clinton campaign. Fusion GPS, the firm that commissioned Steele, who was an MI6 agent formerly and very credible formerly, they commissioned him to compile the dossier. Also, working for someone else during the same time frame, the Russian government. That's a problem. As if that doesn't look bad enough, CNN reported late last night that Director Wray sent out an all-employee email yesterday evening hinting that McCabe's dismissal may have something to do with the incoming Inspector General's report investigating the handling of the 2016 Hillary Clinton email investigation. And the hits just keep on coming. Was the House Intelligence Committee memo on top of the incoming Inspector General's report, the final hit that ultimately knocked McCabe out? What is going on at the FBI? We know that McCabe's wife received a campaign donation from Hillary Clinton and her political action committee when she was running for Virginia State Senate back in 2015. Was that a payment that bought anybody's loyalty? We also know that Strzok and Page were close to McCabe, as revealed in their text messages. Now, I don't want to use the word secret society, but these three amigos, McCabe, Strzok, and Page, not spoken of, but not really, definitely not a secret club, maybe a society, I'm not sure. But the three of them are in the mix a lot here. The House Intelligence Committee memo drops sometime this week. Now, we're about to find out what is in that memo. Well, is it partisan hype? It is a Republican-created memo. So the Republicans have been saying to themselves now for a while, we demand we release the memo. Yeah, we demand that we release the memo. They have complete control. This was put together by the Republicans. They were demanding that they release their own memo. That's not hard to do. It's like, I demand that Glenn Beck wears pants.
Well, dude, you're the one that's choosing whether to wear pants or not. Why make a big deal out of it?
Wear them. This is much more like a Looney Tunes cartoon the further we get into it. And I have a feeling that's not all, folks.
It's Tuesday, January 30th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right, we wanted to bring in Jason Batrill, who is one of our... he's our chief researcher, one of our writers, and been with the program for a long time. He is also former military intelligence, and has actually written some of these things, like the Steele dossier. And I thought he could kind of take us through blow by blow exactly what happened yesterday and what it all means.
So a lot going on yesterday, actually. So we know that the FISA, like you were just talking about, the FISA memo or whatever they're calling that now, was voted on to be released, which was really stupid because there was never any doubt that it was not going to get approved. I think it was 9-4 was the vote, something like that.
But it was theirs to release in the first place.
Yeah.
This is not a secret memo that was generated for the FISA warrant. This was somebody who said, okay, I've seen it. We don't know. I've seen it, and here's what I saw in it. And it was a written... Imagine if during the Lewinsky thing, if the Democrats would have said, we demand that you release the memo that we created about Bill Clinton and how Ken Starr is being so bad. Would we put stock in that? We might look at it to see if there's anything interesting, but we would not use it as a smoking gun because it would have been created by the Democrats in support of their president. What we really need is the actual FISA information. Do we not?
We do. You mean exactly what FISA actually showed?
Yeah, we need to know exactly what they presented. We want the real documents, not a secondhand document from somebody who may or may not have seen the full range of evidence.
What I'm curious about is, and this is what some people like Trey Gowdy have hinted at, is that this is going to show that the Steele dossier was used as evidence that they needed to present to the FISA court to basically say, yeah, you can get these warrants in the Trump campaign. I am really curious about that. But not only that, but I want to know the process. And we were talking about this earlier, but like you said, I've written some of these before, mostly in Afghanistan with Al-Qaeda and Taliban, but we get these things all the time. They're like, hey, Jason, go find out, you know, if the Taliban's over in that village or whatever. So we'd reach out to a source that we trust, and that source would be like, oh, yeah, no problem. Yeah, this guy, he's Taliban. This guy gives food and money to Al-Qaeda, all these people. Well, we wouldn't just send in SEAL Team 6 to go take them out. We would then...
We'd verify.
So we would have to send someone like a CIA agent or someone like that to go talk to these guys, you know, face to face and say, where'd this information come from? You know, like, we need to verify it. Once it's verified, then you take action, like hardcore action. Us would be Kinetic, so, but this would be the FISA.
So what we really need to know on the FISA thing is, did the FBI do, even if they say, well, there was no time, did the FBI at the same time say, let's check on the veracity, let's go to the sources that are mentioned in this document,
pivotal,
and see if we can verify?
So important.
You could make the case that, well, we didn't have time to do all of that because the presidency, you know, the presidency could be compromised and we only had a few months, so we had to do them in tandem. But if they didn't do that, if they didn't go back, because the, you know, especially the Golden Shower stuff is so ridiculous. And it screams KGB. I mean, that's the way they do it. And it screams that. We did the FBI know that the Steele dossier was financed by the DNC and at the same time that Steele was working part-time for the Russians?
Yeah.
That's important.
That's very important. And you would think that not only that, but this dossier screams former Soviet Union KGB-like style and tactics.
Right.
Like, this is the stuff they do. Before, they would try to insert information in other ways. Like, they would send stupid stuff, like Oliver Stone's JFK movie, which was and a lot of people don't know that story, was a total Soviet plant. All that stuff was like a plant from like a newspaper back in the 50s or whatever. Mm-hmm. That was all KGB work. Oliver Stone picked it up and ran with it. But this is the type of stuff they do. They plant disinformation through credible sources like Steele. But the issue is, if there is time, like you pointed out, there's time to vet those sources and find out if we need to take other steps. Now, you could be right. They could have said, we have no time. The election's coming. We have to do something now.
Yeah, we don't know everything that is in the Steele dossier.
Right.
So there could have been things that, if this is true, we cannot, this guy cannot be president of the United States. We don't know. And it, the same could be said if it was on Hillary Clinton. So I don't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater. As long as they are at the same time checking, wait a minute, Steele, you're getting money from the Russians now? What are the connections there? Who did you talk to? Who gave us this information? Can we verify that? If they're not doing that at the same time, if they're just turning FISA and looking at Trump based on the Steele dossier and not doing any verification of it, that is really dangerous.
So this conversation, I am highly confident, is the same exact conversation that's been going on in the House Intelligence Committee at this time. I bet you that's entirely what they were saying. Republicans are saying, we need to get this out there now because they spied on the Trump campaign. And the Democrats are probably saying, look, we're still vetting these sources, for crying out loud. We had no time. We're still trying to check to see if this stuff is accurate. If you release this now without redacting, and even if you do redact it, we're not, all those sources are going to go underground. We're not going to be able to check them out. That's my guess on the conflict right now, this exact same conversation.
And I have to tell you, anybody who is saying that we need to redact it, you know, for national security purposes, if it was happening to the other party, both sides would be switched.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both sides would be switched. So yeah. There's nobody that's actually, I mean, I just think the American people, they just want the truth. They just want the truth. I think there are those who are still playing partisan politics. And, you know, we'll accept any argument from their side.
And we should point out, too, that there are serious people in the intelligence world having these conversations.
Yes.
However, it's not the conversation they're having with us. What we're seeing here is nonstop theater. I mean, again, let's take on our own side just because it's easy to take on the Democrats. I want to see this memo, because I want more information on this. I want to see the Democrat version, which also exists and supposedly is going to be coming out eventually. I want to see both of their arguments, because this is essentially, you're watching Law and Order. There's a prosecutor, there's a defense. You're seeing both sides of it. I want to see both sides of it so I can try to make a decision.
Except you're tampering with the jury pool.
Yeah, right. I mean, not saying that
this is pre-trial negotiation stuff.
Yeah,
you're actually tampering with the jury pool, because if both sides are putting this out, this is not the investigation. This is not the actual trial. This isn't what anyone would use to condemn the FBI, the Democrats, or Donald Trump. This will only be used to condemn those people in the jury, us, in our minds. This is not, I may be the only person alive that thinks that we should not see this memo yet.
Yeah, I mean, look, I want to see it because I want to try to make a decision. There are people, and we've talked to some of them in Washington, who are big time Republicans, who argue releasing this memo now is a bad idea because of exactly what you're talking about. There's an investigation going on, and it's going to screw with the investigation. Yeah, not about Trump, but about Russia.
Yeah.
And so it's too big of a risk, and we should wait. There's no reason for it to come out right now, you know, per se, other than political reasons. But again, going back to the sort of theater of this idea, the Republicans, dozens of them, went on Twitter and started a hashtag, release the memo. They demanded you help them to spread this hashtag so it got trending, so that we'd be able to release the memo. And here at the end of this, what we find out is that it was a Republican memo written by Republicans. It was voted on partisan lines in the committee that Republicans could release it. And now it's going to go to a Republican president who's going to likely say that it was going to be released. When you said release the memo, who were you asking? Who were you demanding release the memo? The exact people who wanted you to start the hashtag. So it's just like, it's all theater. They're just trying to get all of us excited about these things. And I want to see the information. I do. But why do we have to deal with this as well?
I think we can sum it up with this. And I'm sorry to change the subject, but this is very important. Will someone please tell Glenn Beck to wear pants? We need a hashtag so he can finally see it.
You're Glenn.
Hashtag Glenn must wear pants.
I'd like to push back on this one, but I also agree.
There's a lot more going on. Jason, stay with us because it wasn't just the memo. That was about a third of the news yesterday.
Guys, and please spread the hashtag Glenn wear the pants. Glenn wear the pants. Hashtag Glenn wear the pants.
Let me tell you about a sponsor of ours that has just joined us. And it's a new sponsor, but I have been doing commercials for another flower company that I thought was a really great flower company. And so did somebody else, FTD. And FTD went out and paid a lot of money for this and I think ripped the heart out of this company. And I started getting complaints from you saying, you know, Glenn, the flowers are all dead by the time they get here. A lot of complaints. And so we stopped. We have a new sponsor taking their place. And the reason why I'm telling you this is because I've always promised you if clients are not who they say they are, we will not do business with them. So we started doing our homework, and 1-800-Flowers.com has been trying to get on this program forever and ever and ever. I wasn't real interested in taking another flower sponsorship so quickly. I talked to the CEO of 1-800-Flowers. His brother is the one who started this. They bought a flower company, and they bought it a long time ago, 40-some years ago, because he really needed to make extra money to have the family survive. Well, this flower shop, they really got into it and they really did a great job. And it started to grow and grow and grow and grow. The guy who started it over 40 years ago is still the chairman of the board. And his brother, who was like 15 when he started working there, is now the CEO. So it's still a family business. They remember who they are. They remember why they started it. And the reason why they started it is because they know that what you're trying to do is send somebody the feeling that you have about them. That's really important. So they have flowers now. If you want to send, you want to send your love, you want to send smiles, you want to send the way you feel about your Valentine, I want you to go to 1-800-Flowers.com. The roses from 1-800-Flowers are picked at their peak. They're shipped overnight. They are fresh, and she's going to love them. A dozen multicolored roses now for $19.99, or you can upgrade to 24 multicolored roses for just $10 more. Do it right now. Think ahead. Get this off your plate. 1-800-Flowers.com. 1-800-Flowers.com. Click on the radio icon and enter the promo code Beck and you'll get this deal. It is 1-800-Flowers.com. Radio icon. Promo code Beck.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Okay, so let's go through this. The FISA memo we now know is going to be released. It could always be released because it was an internal Republican memo. And we saw a lot of stagecraft here to get this released. We don't know what it says, but it'll go to Donald Trump. He'll approve it, and it will be released. That was only one third of what happened yesterday. Also, what happened was Director Ray reviewed the memo, and he also is having some problems with a new inspector general that is coming in. You want to give us a little bit of that, Jason?
So we know Director Ray. So they, I guess, one of the things the Democrats said was they were complaining about, as they should, that to release this was to compromise an investigation. Mm-hmm. So I guess Republicans compromised on that and said, okay, well, let's let Director Ray read the memo. So they had been holding this back from the FBI for the longest time, but they finally let Director Wray read the memo. So Director Wray read the memo. I think it took him a while. I think they said it was a 4-page memo. And not too long after that, Andy McCabe, Deputy Director Andrew McCabe, is announced that he steps down. Now, I think that the timing on this is very, very interesting. I think that this definitely had a part of what happened.
Because McCabe is friends with Strzok and Page, the two people that, remember, they lost all of their texts. He's friends with them. And he was the Andy in that, in those texts that says, you know, remember we had a meeting in Andy's office and we just can't let this guy win. There's got to be some kind of insurance policy.
Right. And we also know that around this time, there was an inspector general report that was going around. And
we'll get into that in just a second. Stand by.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
So yesterday was a big day, and the investigation on Russia and Trump and Hillary Clinton, a lot happened. One is the memo, the FISA memo, that has been deemed secret. It was written by the Republicans in defense of the Republicans. And then the Republicans had to convince you to convince them to release it. So yesterday they voted to release this this memo. It'll be interesting to see what is in it, but it will be important to stress what is not in it. This is only one side of it. And, you know, with all the hype on this, I got to believe there's something juicy in it. We brought in Jason Petrill, who is a former military intelligence, used to write these kinds of memos. What do you expect to see in this that is accurate?
I expect to see that they did have some information coming from Russia. I definitely expect that there's credible sources that Steele uses. I don't expect to see names of sources because I don't think Steele will ever give those up. So we're not going to see anything a whole lot new, I don't believe. I think we're going to get a whole lot of what some people are calling pure speculation and rumor and what other people are calling actual hard intelligence.
But the Nunez memo itself is not going to have that. The Nunez memo is going to be more about the case against
the FBI,
the way the FBI handled both the Clinton email investigation and also the way they got into this with Steele, right? Because this is going to be essentially their side of it.
Yeah, well...
Well, wait, the FISA memo from Nunez isn't about the Clinton. That is the another memo that is coming out from the Attorney General. I'm sorry, not the Attorney General, the Inspector General. That one is, what were you doing during the Clinton thing? There's some, that one apparently is not good for the FBI. And I'm really interested because that's an Inspector General. That's so nonpartisan.
And that memo, we know an email went out from Director Wray yesterday. It was a FBI-wide email last night. So all this stuff is happening within the same day, pretty much, within a 24-hour time frame. But last night, he sends it out, and he examines, you know, and addresses why McCabe left. And he strongly hints, according to CNN, strongly hints that it was because of this Inspector General finding about how they handled the 2016 Hillary Clinton email investigation.
And so is that real? Is that really why he left? And to have CNN as the source on that, that's pretty good. They don't want to report that.
I mean, we know that this has been going on for a little while. So I don't think the findings were new. It's just this announcement was new. But that coupled on top of what Director Wray just read in the House Intelligence Committee memo, that might have been the 1-2 shot that eventually just knocked him out.
Right, because the Inspector General's coming out and saying, look how you handled this. And if the FISA, the Nunez FISA secret memo, has McCabe in there with this secret cabal between the three of them saying, we need some sort of an insurance policy, and there's more to that than what we already know, that would be very bad.
Is my instinct wrong to think that we should probably just wait until this stuff comes out before going crazy over this stuff? I mean, I just feel like there's so much nonsense surrounding it and so many political goals, people pushing for their own agendas, that until we actually see this information, we really can't judge it. I feel like we're just kind of caught up in this hype circle.
So I disagree with you to some extent. I don't think that we are caught in the hype circle on this. I mean, what we're trying to do is saying, don't get caught in the hype circle. When this memo comes out, remember, it's one side written by the political players in Washington defending their side. Now, there may be, you know what this is? If we jump to conclusions based on a politically written memo from a party and the party bosses, and we act on that, we are no different than if the FISA court was given all of this information about Donald Trump from the DNC and they acted on that without saying, wait a minute, let's see all of the evidence. Where did you get this evidence? How did you arrive at this? We can't do what we are accusing the FISA court of doing, and that is just taking one source and looking at all of these things and saying, oh my gosh, look at all of this. We got to act. No, no. Look at it. Store it away. Keep it in your head. Remain calm and carry on.
This is amazing because we have a politically motivated dossier that kicked off a lot of this. Now we have a politically motivated House Intelligence Committee memo almost in response. I mean, I'm really torn on this because either way, our country loses on this. Either way. Either
and Russia wins.
And Russia wins. Either the Democrats conspired with Russian help to undermine a presidential candidate, or Republicans are conspiring to damage the FBI. I mean, either way, look at this. I was just looking at the postmortem for the FBI. So this is the FBI and the DOJ. McCabe, as of yesterday, out. Orr from the Justice Department has been demoted twice. He's basically like a janitor now over there, I think. Strzok and Page both kicked off. Strzok kicked off the Mueller probe. Page left just before the text went public. The FBI general counsel, he served as counsel for McCabe, Baker. He was reassigned. Many people speculate because of this. Rybicki, the chief of staff for both Comey and Wray, left the FBI. I mean, this is racking up day by day.
Really I'm bad to you either way. I mean, this, gosh, there's no winning
this
here.
Here's the. There is a long-term win if we hold our heads together, if we are patient and don't do anything based on political stuff, do it on reason and facts, then there is a big win here. You know, in 2008, I said, I'm telling you, if this guy lasts the way he's running things, we will find the biggest scandals, bigger than Watergate. We'll find it. It'll be there. I believe we are seeing this. Why is it so remarkable to think that the FBI might be turned into a political organization when that is exactly what the Washington Post exposed with Richard Nixon? He used the Justice Department. Look at the number of people in the Justice Department, all the way to the Attorney General. Would anyone be surprised if we found out our former Attorney General was stacking this politically, was doing all kinds of things for political reasons? Would anyone have a doubt the guy who did Fast and Furious might have been involved in stacking the FBI, so we're not investigating the things we should be? I wouldn't be surprised by that. And quite honestly, neither would the Democrats if I said that about Donald Trump. Would you be surprised if Donald Trump was stacking the DOJ to make sure that they investigate what he wants and not what he doesn't want? That was the problem with the Watergate. And look how many people it took down. As it should have. I say let the chips fall where they may. I want the FBI and the Justice Department fumigated. I want it. I want all of the partisans from the left and from the right. I want them out. Justice must be blind. We have created a system where nothing is blind. You're judged on everything, whether you voted for this person or that person. Justice must be blind. And I think if we hold our heads together and we don't panic and we don't play, all the world is but a stage and we are merely but the players. We are being played. We're being played, and we're being played for votes. Both sides are playing this for votes. And it makes us not see that there is real corruption in our government, and it is tied directly to the parties and to Russia. That's what we have to hold out front and center and let the chips fall where they may. Liberty Safe. They're amazing people. They not only build the best built safes on the planet, and they build them here in America, which is, that's not an easy thing to do. That is a hard thing to do. They had a little shop when we first met, and now they're one of the biggest safe makers and safe sellers in the world now. Liberty Safe is really, really great, and they make them here in America, and they now have an unbelievable price deal that is going on. 12 months interest-free payments with zero down and zero APR. They even offer Liberty Safes for as low as $20 a month, $20 a month. I've been working with them for a long time. I've never seen them do a sale before. I don't think they've... Have they ever done a sale? I don't think so.
Very infrequently.
Yeah. Liberty Safe, really, the peace of mind, the quality, the lifetime warranty, the in-home service, the people that, you go down to your local safe store and you ask them about a Liberty Safe, they'll show them to you, and these people are rock solid. Do what I did. Have yours installed. You can now have it installed with 12-month interest-free payments or as low as $20 a month on approved credit. You have valuables, you have things that need to be protected. If you have guns, you need a safe. Liberty Safe is the one. Liberty Safe, the home of the best built safes on the planet. They're at libertysafe.com. That's libertysafe.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Trust is an important thing. It's something that we do a lot more as human beings than I think most people realize. You drive down the road and there's a little yellow line between a car coming at you at 50 miles an hour, and you're on your side of the road and they're on their side of the road, and we just trust that they'll stay on their side of the road. Their self-interest will do it, whatever it is. We don't die most of the time when we're driving, and this is a positive thing. It's hard, though, to find people you can trust when it comes to really complicated transactions like real estate. What do you do? You're talking about your biggest investment in your entire life, and you're trusting this to someone because you don't understand what any of those forms mean. I never do. No one does. Half the people don't even read them. You need someone who can walk you through a big transaction like buying or selling a home and make sure they're people that you can trust, that have been screened, that aren't just some random person you're looking up in the phone book. RealEstateAgentsITrust.com is a company that Glenn actually started because he was trying to sell his house and had some issues. And basically what they do at realestateagentsitrust.com, it's a network of 1,200 agents. And Glenn and his team have gone through and found the best ones in each area. And you go and you put in your address and you put in your area where you are and you find an agent you can trust. It's your biggest investment. You need to take it seriously. Go to realestateagentsitrust.com. It's realestateagentsitrust.com. Give it a shot. realestateagentsitrust.com.
Glenn Beck.
Let me go to Saul, who's listening to us in New York. Hi, Saul. Welcome to the program. Saul, are you there?
There?
Yes. Go ahead, sir.
Okay. Hey, Glenn, I agree with you that it's politically motivated, but it's not politically motivated as much as you think on the Republican side. What do they gain by making it politically motivated? No one's going to jail. That's obvious. And like you, we need to fumigate these departments. And guys like Jim Jordan working so hard to try to get this truth exposed, I think that falls into the CNN narrative where this is politically motivated, it's partisan politics, etc.
Hang on.
Corruption.
Hang on just a second. I agree with you. It's on corruption. I agree with you. I mean, there's some serious Republicans who
like Jim Jordan.
Yeah. Pardon me. Yeah, we love him.
Yeah.
There's some serious Republicans that are involved in this, and there are some serious Republicans that are saying, don't release this because it will hurt the investigation right now. Don't. It's important that it comes out, yada, yada, yada. The problem I have, Saul, when you say it's not politically motivated, again, I said earlier, if I said to you, you have to call Glenn Beck because he has got to wear pants, and I want you to do a hashtag thing, and I want you to tell all your friends, Glenn Beck has to wear pants. Well, Glenn Beck is telling you that. This is a Republican memo issued by the Republicans, and then the Republicans, who had the right to release it the whole time, they could have just released it. They made a big deal out of it, and, you know, that's what political parties are for.
Mm-hmm.
But recognize when there is a political party involved in this. If they would have just released it, that would have been one thing. But they didn't. They made it into a show and said, we've got to release this. Well, they had the power to release it the whole time. The whole time.
Right. It's real. These are real issues.
Yes.
Surrounded by theater. It's the same thing with the Russia investigation. We won't look at the left. They are making this big thing about Trump and trying to make this into Trump. When there's a real issue about what Russia is doing with our elections that exists underneath all this theater.
Yeah.
And all we do is deal with the theater back and forth, back and forth, back and forth when there's something real here. The same thing, I think, with the FBI. I think there's a lot of great FBI agents. I think they do a lot of great things. Our intelligence community are not all villains. However, there is an obvious issue with corruption at certain levels of these organizations.
And we don't know what they are yet.
We don't know what they are yet, but we need to find out what it is, and we need to sort through all the nonsensical theater to get to it. I think the theater hurts it. It's what parties do, but that is, I think it's detrimental.
And I think, I agree with you, Saul, that, there are real issues here. I disagree that it's not political theater. It is political theater, and we have to be able to separate that from what the memo says and then separate that from what the actual hard evidence says. We won't know what the hard evidence says. This is one side looking at it. So we have to be measured here, because the real goal is to actually find out what's happening in the FBI, the Justice Department, and with Russia. You with me, Saul, or did you leave?
No, I'm still here. The question I have then is, when you have a year's worth of investigating with this Mueller investigation, and yet on some networks and some pundits talking about the distraction from the Republican side on the Mueller investigation, how much are we distracting? This man has had a year of our tax dollars to spend to do this investigation, but yet we're still hearing a narrative that this is all just a distraction to the Mueller investigation.
So that's your problem is, and I agree with you, is with the media and the way the media is spinning it. Watergate happened in 1972. It wasn't finished until like 1970, what, six? I mean, it went on for 4 years.
Yeah, Nixon came out in his State of the Union and said 1 year of Watergate is enough.
Right. I mean, this is how long these things take. I just think it is really imperative that we all look and say, on both sides, this is political posturing. And in that political posturing, there may be some truths that we need to look at. But this is political posturing. Let's look at those truths and let's verify. Let's not do what we're accusing the FISA court of doing, taking an open dossier, one source, and buying into it and saying, we need to spy. No, that's one source. Let's verify what's in there and do it methodically. We have one shot at this. Let's do it right.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love.
Wow, was that Republican-backed tax plan evil or what? Whew. And if you did get a raise or a bonus or anything, those are just crumbs. At least those are the lines from the Democrats, that the plan is all about lining the pocket of the companies and rich people. Although in California, they're trying to claw all that money back and trying to tax the companies on all of the profits that they now get to keep because of the federal income tax. Trickle-down economics. It's a myth invented by Republicans to make you just poor and miserable. Democrats have repeated basically the same line since Andrew Jackson, and I'm not kidding. And the media has helped them repeat that message over and over and over again, and our so-called educational institutions are just feeding that nonsense to our children day and night. Now, I want to make sure everybody understands. I mean, the tax plan was not some genius, oh my gosh, look at this, a real overhaul. It was a mediocre plan that could have been a lot better, but I will take it and I will celebrate that we have it. But let me point out one part of the tax plan that's really good that nobody has really talked about. And it's designed to help some of the most economically depressed areas in the country. It's a stealthy part of the tax plan. It's buried on page 130 of the bill. And it allows states to designate certain regions within the state borders as an opportunity zone. Now, these are the areas with high poverty, unemployment, slow business growth. And what this tax plan does, it allows businesses and venture capitalists to invest long term in these opportunity zones. And by doing it, they can save a ton of money through avoiding capital gains taxes. This is really good. This is how this works. Over the last 5 years, the U.S. economy has grown and added jobs, but the growth has been mostly in large cities. From 2010 to 2014, prime Obama years, more businesses closed in rural America than opened. You know, Democrats, if you would just hear that, you might start to figure out why Donald Trump won. There's another reason. Now, with this in the new tax plan, investors are going to be able to create opportunity funds for these zones around the country and seed new businesses, expand existing businesses, or develop real estate. If the investors maintain their investment for 10 years, they avoid paying capital gains taxes altogether. That is gigantic. The chairman of President Trump's Council for Economic Advisors said, if this plan works, quoting, "We'll look back 10 years from now and say this is one of the most important parts of the tax bill, and nobody really even talked about it." Plenty of ways to be cynical about a provision like this. Maybe it's a corporate scheme to take rural America for a ride while avoiding taxes. Or maybe it really is what it sounds like, the government actually cracking open a window of opportunity for private businesses to do what they're best at, and the process helps parts of the country that really need the boost. What a concept.
It's Tuesday, January 30th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
A guy whose writing has really affected my life, and I have a ton of respect for, and I think is a brave and funny individual, Jonah Goldberg, joins us now. Hello, Jonah. How are you?
Hey, Glenn. It's great to be here.
It's good to have you on. So let me start with this. Before we get in the news of the day and everything that's going on, you were outspoken on Donald Trump. Tell me the things that he has done that you say, I can't believe it. This is really good.
Oh, gosh, there are a bunch. I mean, obviously, right. the judges, you know, starting with Gorsuch, but also on the lower courts. I like, from what I've seen, about 98% of the deregulation stuff. And some of it is not necessarily his hands-on, his personal handiwork. I mean, Ajit Pai and Scott Gottlieb are doing great things at the FCC and the FDA. I think a lot of the things he's done we would have gotten from almost any other Republican, but one of the things that I think he deserves extraordinary credit for is on moving the capital of Israel to Jerusalem. I'm not sure any other Republican would have done that. I'm not sure any other Republican would have touched Anwar quite yet. And so, there's some things that I think he's done are great. And
it's hard for people to... It's so funny, because if you say, Well, you know what? I would like to live a little more sustainable life. I don't, you know, I think recycling is important. You're immediately a, you know, global warming crackpot to some. And if you, you know, if you don't believe in that, you know, then all of a sudden, I don't believe in man-made global warming, or I don't believe that the solutions that we're saying that will work will actually work. Well, all of a sudden now you're a crackpot on the other side. And there's no middle ground. There's no way for people to say, you know what? I really like Donald Trump, and I have to give him real high praise on these things, but I'm really kind of disappointed or disgusted by these things. We can't play that middle ground anymore. It's all or nothing on both sides.
No, I mean, that's a huge frustration of mine, and I think there are a lot of reasons for it. I really don't like this kind of binary tribal thinking. Where everyone has a coalition and we all must agree with our members of our coalition and that our enemy coalition isn't our opponents, it's our enemies. They're, you know, the Democrats are an existential threat and all that. Excuse me, I don't like that kind of thinking. But I think, you know, one of the reasons why we have it so much with Donald Trump is that, you know, take, you know, the various sex scandal allegations that roll out with Donald Trump, the latest one being this thing with Stormy Daniels. It's not enough. You know, I have no problem with voters doing a cost benefit analysis and saying, you know, look, on net, he's been better for me and better for the country, and he's doing things I like, but I really just can't stand some of that personal stuff or the tweeting or whatever. But you see people like Jerry Falwell Jr. and Tony Perkins from the Family Research Council just going way out there to offer, as Perkins called it, a mulligan to Trump, and basically minimize or dismiss his personal character stuff. And I think that's really problematic for people who pretend to be or claim to be leading moral authorities. And, you know, Jerry Falwell Jr. took over the mantle of basically his dad's empire, which tried to push Christian morality as deep into politics as they could get it. And I've defended them for it for years. But I think one of the reasons why you get this binary thing is that because of Donald Trump's vanity and his narcissism, and because of the defensiveness that so many of his biggest supporters have, you can't criticize X while supporting Y, because all Donald Trump wants to hear from anybody is flattery, and he needs flattery. And that forces you to either stay silent on things you cannot flatter him on, or to actually flatter him about things that he shouldn't be flattered on. And it's a bad psychological component.
So, Jonah, what are you expecting from the State of the Union tonight that actually is meaningful? I mean, I hate these things because it's nothing but a, you know, a gift list and an introduction of, you know, children without faces. You know,
I honestly think that this is monarchist swill, and that we would be much better off if the president, like in the old days, just sent a letter to Congress, or if we had the State of the Union acted out by mimes, and whoever did the worst by voice vote was fed to wolves. I mean, I think that would be better.
but that stipulated.
I don't know. Look, I think his, you know, his first address to the joint session of Congress technically wasn't a State of the Union. Everyone's calling this his first State of the Union, fine. But he did very well on that first one.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of the first examples, because it was right at the beginning of his presidency, of everyone restarting the, you know, the countdown. You know, it's like there's a construction site sign outside the White House that says X number of days since an unpresidential action by the president, right? And that one was like, you know, all this stuff about how Donald Trump became president tonight. Even Van Jones said it was a very forceful and good presentation. And I don't remember what erased it, but it was a matter of days, if not hours, that a tweet or some other thing came out that just sort of took all the chips back off the table. So, again, I think he'll probably give a good job. He'll try to make this immigration reform thing, which my magazine supports, I haven't made up my mind, into a bipartisan overture to the Democrats. He'll try to sound magnanimous. He'll certainly brag about beating ISIS, which I think he should. He'll brag about the effects of a tax cut, and that's all fine and good. I just don't know that it has much lasting power. And I think part of the problem, you know, one of the surprises I had about the Trump administration was that he didn't immediately go cut deals with Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi much earlier on, or didn't try to.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons why is I think he personally would love to do that. I think he personally emotionally likes this idea of cutting deals and when working with Democrats. He knows those guys better. He grew up around those guys. He used to be one of those guys until fairly recently. But part of the problem was he listened way too much to Steve Bannon at the outset. And he, you know, it's an unfair and old joke, but, you know, that inaugural address probably sounded better in the original German. And it was this sort of, you know, blood of patriots. You know, Trieste belongs to the Italians kind of talk. And that was Bannon doing that, and he fueled all of that. And the problem was is that Trump spent maybe the first 6 months of his presidency and continues to this day doing and saying things that culturally and politically make working with Trump radioactive for Democrats, particularly the base. And that is one of the things that has made it very, very difficult for him to go across the aisle. I don't think that was Bannon's plan. I think Bannon actually believed his own BS and thought this was the beginning of this vast nationalist protectionist movement, and it wasn't. But Trump has politically painted himself into a corner. It makes it very difficult for Democrats to work with him. And very difficult for him to work with Democrats.
We're with Jonah Goldberg, senior editor of the National Review. I want to ask you, Jonah, if you don't mind, I'm going to take a quick break. And then I want to come back and talk to you a little bit about tariffs. My kids asked me about tariffs and why is this bad, Dad, and how does this work? He has started to move into tariffs, which anybody who is free market really doesn't like. And a $1.7 trillion stimulus package. We'll get into that in a second.
We should also get an update from Jonah about his new book coming out in a couple months, Suicide of the West, How the Rebirth of Tribalism, Populism, Nationalism, and Identity Politics is Destroying American Democracy.
Wow. Tax season is approaching, and that's why this week, I guess, you know, one of the things they did in Congress was make sure that it's Tax Identity Theft Awareness Week. Oh, thank you for that, Senator, Congressman. I appreciate that. If you're looking forward to your tax refund arriving, there's a chance that identity thieves might be looking forward to it as well, and they might have beaten you to it. Identity thieves use the IRS, and they have these imposter scams to trick you into giving your Social Security number so they can file a return in your name and claim your refund. They might have just bought your Social Security number, you know, on the dark web. One in four people have already experienced identity theft, 25%, and that number is going to go up. So if you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can still be stolen in ways that you may not detect, and they can steal your information on the dark web or get an online payday loan in your name. The thing that might affect you right now is your income tax return. LifeLock, they detect a wide range of identity thefts, and if they detect your information has been stolen, they're going to send you an alert, and a U.S.-based restoration specialist is going to work to fix it. Nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock is the best, so go there now. LifeLock.com. If you join now, you get a 10% discount by using the promo code BECK, 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com. Use the promo code BECK at 1-800-LIFELOCK or LifeLock.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
Jonah Goldberg from the National Review, a deep thinker and a guy who just knows what he believes and his principles and keeps marching forward, a guy you can trust to have in battle with you. Jonah, let's talk a little bit about, you know, the washing machines in America and why this makes a difference, that there's now a tariff on it.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm a free trader, and I think that free trade, that protectionism being cast as a populist issue has always been a mistake, right? I mean, the idea that what protectionism does is it puts bureaucrats or business people or politicians between the consumer and the products that they want to buy. It is elites saying, oh no, these will cost you more, you can't get those, you have to buy this instead. That's not populism. That's, you know, that's not democracy. That's elitism. That's statism. That's whatever you want to call it. It is, you know, Adam Smith recognized this in The Wealth of Nations in 1776, that businessmen are always trying to get an advantage over the public by conspiring to raise prices. And those kinds of conspiracies are almost impossible to stop, but they can only be effective and really damaging if the government gets involved. And, you know, I wrote, as you know, I wrote this book, you know, called Liberal Fascism, which got into fascist economics. And so much of that is about the government getting in between the producers and the consumers and deciding and picking winners and losers. And that's what protectionism is. And so I get, you know, there are at the margins good arguments for the government, you know, retaliating against governments that are betraying trade deals, right? I mean, you don't have to be 1,000% purist. My colleague Kevin Williamson at National Review just basically says we should have a constitutional amendment that says there shall be no tariffs or limits on trade of any kind. I'm not sure that I am there. You can make some arguments for national security stuff and all the rest, but as a general principle, protectionism boils down to the government picking winners and losers among a certain set of producers of certain manufacturers of certain goods and saying, we're going to help you out and conspire against the public to set prices higher than what they should be. And I think it always, if left to run rampant, always leads to a terrible place.
Jonah, isn't it something, too, because we as conservatives have talked for many years about opposing the redistribution of wealth. And if you follow the line of what a tariff purports to do, with the washing machines, for example, we're going to charge, you know, an extra $50 or $100 on every washing machine. It's going to cost people more money. And that money is somehow going to be filtered through the system and eventually get to create a certain amount of jobs. So you're essentially taking $50 or $100 from the average person buying a washing machine, and you're funneling that money to some worker in some city who's going to make $50,000 or $60,000 on all those little groupings of $50. I know it's not that pure, but I mean, that is essentially just redistribution of wealth, which is something we're supposed to be opposed to.
No, that's exactly right. And it sort of gets at why I honestly and truly believe there should be a 0% corporate tax rate. Mm. Because no economists cannot, for the life of them, come to a consensus on who pays it, you know, when the corporate taxes. But one thing they're sure is that the consumer pays most of it, right? I mean, it's not like GE pays the, you know, takes the corporate tax rate, its corporate tax payments out of some special kitty that is just for, you know, fat cat profits, right? It comes with the price of the widgets that they sell. And same thing with Coca-Cola or any of these companies. And so the idea that, and the same thing goes with protectionism. There's this idea that somehow the government knows better how to organize the society. Right now, there's this movement afoot for a couple dragging steel makers to basically take over the issue of steel trade, steel imports in this country. And what always gets left out of this is that there are a lot of manufacturers in the United States that need cheap steel to make the other stuff that we want to be manufacturing here.
It's really amazing how much we're repeating from the Great Depression on letting these giant companies steer the policy of the United States, which will hurt all of the smaller companies. It's a direct repeat in many ways from the 1930s.
Yeah, I mean, every big, you know, one of my greatest pet peeves is this mythology that big corporations are quote unquote right wing, right? We know that they're not on cultural issues. You know, big Fortune 500 companies were way ahead of the curve on things like gay marriage and all sorts of other things. I'm not criticizing them for it. I'm just saying that they're not these sort of Thomas Nast cartoons, bastions of like reaction or anything. That Marxist stuff is over. And when it comes to like economic conservatism, they're for every regulation that hurts their competitors and helps them. They're for free trade for me, but not for thee, or the other way around. They look at their bottom lines as sort of rent-seeking entities from the government.
So
Go ahead.
I need to stop you, so we're going to need to do a break. And I want to take you to another place. It was announced today that Amazon is partnering with Warren Buffett and J.P. Morgan Chase to go into the healthcare insurance business. But how Warren Buffett described it is astounding. We'll get to that next with Jonah Goldberg.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So earlier today, in fact, it sent some healthcare stocks tumbling before the opening of the stock market today. Amazon, Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway, and J.P. Morgan Chase announced that they are exploring the option of getting into the healthcare business, the health insurance business. Warren Buffett said the ballooning costs of healthcare act as a hungry tapeworm on the American economy. We share the belief that putting our collective resources behind a company's best talent can, in time, check the rise of healthcare costs while concurrently enhancing patient satisfaction and outcomes. Here's the strange line in this. The company will be free from profit-making incentives and constraints, end quote. Jonah Goldberg from the National Review. What kind of what? How does that work? I don't know how that works.
I don't really see it clearly either. I mean, to me, and I haven't studied up on it, but I mean, it sounds to me sort of the equivalent of what Google does, where it provides, you know, free dry cleaning and, free cafeterias and free food and all that kind of stuff. And it's all heavily subsidized and doesn't make a profit of any kind, but it retains talent. And so maybe this is just an effort to create something that, isn't necessarily seen as a profit center, but it is seen as a very useful sort of retention center, because health costs are eating up a lot of big businesses.
So could it be like
reducing costs isn't the same thing as increasing profits, but in a certain kind of accounting way, it kind of is, right?
Right. So, I mean, I'm trying to figure it. Would you have to be a member of the bank and do everything with Amazon? Or, I mean, I don't know.
I don't quite get it either. I think what they want, first of all, I think part of the problem is, and Warren Buffett is very good at this stuff, and so is Jeff Bezos. They want, and so is Jamie Dimon. They want to sound as altruistic as possible.
Yes.
And so, you know, it's sort of like the old cliche about how if someone says it's not about the money, it's about the money. If these guys are saying, I don't trust these guys to say it's not really about the profits. You can't be the two of the three richest people on the planet and not have some concern about profit.
You've also left out the nation's largest bank.
Except for that, Mrs. Lincoln.
Right.
It's a weird thing, you know, and I'm not saying it's impossible for them to be altruistic. You drive around this country and you look at all the libraries named after Gettys and Mellon, those guys. So there's a lot of that possibility, but that doesn't sound like this. This sounds like a very clever PR spin on maybe something that's very smart that will undermine CVS and United Health and some of these other, medical healthcare giants. And frankly, they all need to be disrupted and undermined because the healthcare sector
doesn't work. Yeah. All right. Let me change subjects because we have the president's State of the Union address, and I have a feeling he's going to be, announcing his $1.7 trillion stimulus package. Conservatives freaked out at 787. I mean, I can remember the number. $787 billion. We thought that was outrageous. Now it's somewhere between 1.5 and 1.7 on a stimulus package. That comes the same week that somebody advised the president that the government should be building the 5G network. Thank God for Ajit Pai from the FCC and the other, both Republicans and Democrats on the FCC said, no, we don't have any place doing that. Who's advising the president right now on some of these things? And do you see us being able to affect this out of control spending and kind of, adoption of let the state take this business on attitude?
Well, you know, this is not going to make me popular with anybody, but I think one of the things that has been remarkable about the Trump presidency so far is how well, under incredibly trying circumstances, the institutions, particularly, you know, the House and the Senate and the establishment generally, including in his own administration, has been able to manage and direct the Trump presidency from some of Trump's worst instincts. And, you know, I think Trump probably wanted to do infrastructure day one. He wanted tariffs day one. You know, he wanted all sorts of things day one that that Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell said no to, but or sort of engineered the system to make impossible. And I, the problem is all they were really doing was kicking the can down the road. There are very few things that constitute core ideological beliefs of Donald Trump. One of them is protectionism. Another one is this infrastructure stuff. And he still has this belief, which, you know, Bannon had too, that spending hugely on infrastructure can buy Democratic support. I don't think that's necessarily true anymore. I think it would have been true at the beginning of his presidency, but he didn't go that way. In terms of the more dismaying, you know, sort of ideological corruption of the GOP to supporting this stuff, I find it repugnant. You know, I mean, if you honestly believe in protectionism and if you honestly believe in massive, you know, Keynesian economic spending where you just give the economy this huge sugar rush and of all that kind of stuff, if you believe that stuff, you have every reason for you to go out there and advocate for it. But there are so many people I know personally who don't believe this stuff and who have suddenly changed to endorsing it or didn't believe this stuff, but suddenly endorse it because Donald Trump likes it. Now, it is possible that some of these politicians in closed rooms have been ensorcelled by Donald Trump's Aristotelian gift for persuasion and rhetoric and explained to them that protectionism is better. But I don't think that's really the case. I think this is purely an example of power corrupting people, people sucking up to power, of bending and jettisoning their principles in order to be in the good graces of the ruler. And it's very, very sad. And the GOP, to the extent it's going to be a conservative party, free market party going into the future, is going to spend decades cleaning up this mess.
Jonah, could I ask you to come back some point and just tell me what it was like growing up in your home?
Sure.
I mean, your dad, you just released one of your dad's writings. Your dad wrote for the Wall Street Journal. So he was, you know, you grew up around a guy who was in and around these circles and monitoring them, you know, since you were little. Your mother was the one who told Monica Lewinsky, save the dress and make a tape to Linda Tripp. Yep. I mean, that's, I can't even imagine. I know my experience of, you know, just that one event. I can't imagine that my mother was involved in any way or not. How this just affected you?
Well, you forget that when my mom, when I was a little kid, my mom was in a scandal with the Nixon administration, which we can get into some other time. But yeah, no, I had a strange childhood, and you know, and I'm not your typical pseudo intellectual demi Jew from the Upper West Side of Manhattan, and it's, you know, but I'm very grateful to my parents for, you know, the sort of weird, goofy, strange upbringing that they gave me. You know, my dad's idea of, my dad was your classic sort of Jewish intellectual, and his idea of a vacation was either going to the other side of the couch to read a different magazine or book, or going to Europe and looking at museums, or going on long walks with his sons to explain to them why Stalin was really, really bad. And, you know, that was sort of my, you know, I got most of my education from my dad.
Did you ever kind of roll your eyes? I mean, because every child goes through a period where you're like, oh, geez, and they're going on about this again. Did you ever roll your eyes on that Stalin stuff, or did you buy it the whole time?
Well, I mean, it was a lot of it was sort of like in Karate Kid, where Ralph Macchio doesn't know why he's waxing on and waxing off and paint the fence up and down, up and down. And then all of a sudden, sort of my late teens, I kind of discovered, holy crap, I know a lot more about this stuff than everybody else in this room.
Yeah.
And to me, it was just my dad talking, you know, and it was, you know, I used to tell people that, you know, one of my earlier memories is of my dad pushing me on a swing, explaining how the Yugoslavian Black Hand was the first modern terrorist organization. And one time I wrote about this in the eulogy I wrote to my dad, where we're walking down the street going to get bagels on a Sunday morning. I couldn't have been older than seven, maybe eight. And all of a sudden my dad stopped dead in the middle of the sidewalk, squeezed my hand really hard and said to me totally straight faced, "Jonah, if you are ever pulled over in a South American country, tell the officer, I'm so sorry. Is there any way I can pay the fine right here? Because you don't want to go down to the jail." And then we went back to walking. I went, okay, Daddy. So he was a peculiar duck, as he liked to say.
Who did you get your sense of humor from, Mom or Dad?
The dry stuff I get from my dad, the more gonzo crazy, stuff I get from my mom.
So the more dry stuff, you're implying that there is a shot that maybe your dad was joking about the, you know, South American police officers?
Unclear. He just thought that kind of stuff was, it amused him to say it, but he almost never broke character. I mean, I'll give you another example. Again, I wrote about it in the eulogy. When I was a teenager, long story short, I accidentally rubbed some hot sauce in my eye, and I went running into the bathroom to wash out my eye, and I'm like tearing up and it stinks, whatever. My dad walks by, bathroom door is open, he walks in and he says, "What happened?" And I'm like blubbering, "Ah, I got hot sauce in my eye. Ah, I was eating, you know, cheese and crackers and he just deadpan says, "Damn it. I wish I had told you not to rub hot sauce in your eye." And walks out of the room.
Jonah Goldberg, you can follow him at the National Review online. I follow his Twitter page.
Yeah, at Jonah NRO. I'm very now concerned that I'm doing a terrible job as a parent. I have not told my kids to not put hot sauce in their eyes or what to do when they get arrested in a South American country. But I guess I'll have a couple of years to get to that. A couple things from Jonah.
We have to talk to him about this, too. Man, we just have so much to talk about. His new book. Is Jonah still on the line? Jonah.
Yeah.
Can you give us a highlight of your new book? When's it come out?
It doesn't come out till April. Okay. And for some people, I try to explain it as kind of like a prequel to liberal fascism. And it explains where the greatness of Western civilization and the greatness of America comes from, and how our decline is a choice, and how the greatest threat to America and the West is the pervasive ingratitude to how good we have it and how we got here. And it starts, I mean, the table starts about 250,000 years ago and goes through the invention of how we got capitalism, how we got democracy, all the way up to the present day. So it's a big book, and I'm pretty proud of it. So,
and the name of it is the Suicide of the Western World.
The Suicide of the West, which is a somewhat of an homage to a famous conservative intellectual named James Burnham, who wrote a book by the same name in, I think, 1964, I want to say. And it covers some of that ground, but gets into a lot of economic theory, and I think is pretty readable. And even if you disagree with some of my points, I think there's just a lot of interesting, fun stuff in there. So,
Jonah, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye. He doesn't sound like he's like his dad at all, going to the other side of the couch for another book.
No, not at all.
He is
not
always, you know, it starts 25,000 years ago. So it's simple.
That's a good thing about, because, I mean, liberal fascism is not a simple topic at all, but it's so readable. That's why I love Jonah's stuff.
He's funny.
Yeah.
He is. He finds a way to distill it. I mean, how big is that book? 300 pages? 350 pages? Yeah. Something like that. It's not a long, you know. And it covers everything.
Yeah, it does.
It's really good. Simply Safe. I want to talk to you a little bit about Simply Safe. We have been working with them since they had 10 employees, and they have transformed into the fastest growing home security company in the nation. They're now protecting over 2 million people. And they have just released their brand new home security system, the all-new SimpliSafe. It has been completely redesigned, rebuilt, and they have added safeguards to protect against power outages, downed Wi-Fi, cut landlines. They've taken bats and hammers to it. The new SimpliSafe. It has been redesigned to be practically invisible with really powerful, very small sensors. Now, what's remarkable is not only they've done all of this, they spent years building the system, they've added so much, but you still get it at the same fair and honest price, 24/7 protection for only $14.99 a month. And there's no contract. It's smaller, it's faster, it's stronger than anything they built before. Supply is limited now. Go to simplysafebeck.com. Order now, simplysafebeck.com. You're going to get a special discount, simplysafebeck.com.
Glenn Beck, Mercury.
Every once in a while, one of those products crosses the line from product name to just the thing that we call the product. It's like, you know, Kleenex, you know, instead of tissues, it just became Kleenex. Everyone called it Kleenex. TiVo was like that. The DVR was just a TiVo for a long time. Now it's DVR. Well, you know, Q-tips are like that. When you think about cleaning your ears, like, it's just Q-tips. That's not necessarily what they're called. That's the brand name. And, you know, you think, okay, well, this is something we all have and we all use, and it's got to be the best way to do it. Well, actually, not at all. It's not even designed to clean your ears. That's not what a Q-tip is supposed to do. Look at the box. They got a bunch of uses for it. They don't say stick one of these way down in the middle of your ear. That's not what they're recommending. WaxRx, they are recommending you use WaxRx to clean your ears because that's what it's for. The WaxRx system is the method physicians trust the most, and it's just like the system they use in their offices. The WaxRx system has these waxed softening drops that break down ear wax inside the ear. It's not something that people want to talk about, but again, you're doing this at your house, and you want to make sure that it's actually done the right way. Go to usewaxrx.com. and order your reusable ear wash system today and use the offer code radio, and they're going to ship it free right to your door. The promo code gets you the free standard shipping. Give it a shot. Use waxrx.com. Promo code radio. It's usewaxrx.com.
Glenn Beck.
I just love Jonah Goldberg. We have to have him back. You know, we just looked up. His mom was part of Nixon, got in trouble with Nixon. Yeah. I mean, her testimony at Watergate, because of what she was doing, she was spying on McGovern. Her testimony was part of it right there at the end that led to his resignation. So she was involved with Linda Tripp and the blue dress and Watergate. And she worked for the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration.
It's a crazy.
Holy cow.
Really interesting. That would be a great conversation with him to parents. Talk about that. Yeah,
just parents.
That's an interesting conversation with everybody, isn't it?
I think so.
To see what not only what you take away from your parents, but also just the life they lived and how it influenced you. Sometimes it's not the straight advice like Jonah was talking about. It's just something that they did that you noticed that changed the way you thought about
something. I think that's more than almost anything I learned from my dad. It's just watching him, you know. And it's interesting. It would be really interesting to track, to do an interview with people about their mom and dad when they're teenagers, or when they're when they still think mom and dad can fly, then teenagers when they think they're the worst in their 20s, 30s, and then 50s. Because my parents, the image of my parents has changed so many times in my mind because I understand them at my age every step of the way.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
At 5 months in the womb, babies have 10 fingers and 10 toes. They can yawn, they can stretch, and they do. But they also feel pain. Now, despite the scientific fact, the Senate voted against the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, which would ban late-term abortions on babies at 20 weeks. 46 out of 97 senators decided they want to continue the debate rather than pass the bill. Now, it's not a perfect bill. Still allows babies conceived by rape or incest to be aborted, and it draws a hard line at 20 weeks. The question is, so does that mean that a baby that is 19 weeks and 6 days old, do they not feel pain? And I hate to get here because this is just so dicey. A baby conceived of through rape, does that baby not feel pain? Even if there is a point where a baby doesn't feel pain, does it mean it's okay to kill a baby? I'm not proposing answers. I'm just saying we have to think about this. Just because it doesn't hurt, is it okay to take that life? No, it's really not. We shouldn't be dismembering and doing the things we do to babies in abortion clinics. Abortion is and always will be hideous and barbaric, no matter what gestation period, you know, it occurs or how that baby came to be. It's just barbaric. As a society, we really need to have a decent conversation with each other. We need to be able to stop just yelling names and you know, throwing blood on each other one way or the other, and just sit down and just talk about the children. This bill was a step in the right direction. It shows a glimmer of hope that maybe we're beginning to realize the sheer horror and murder of abortion. I know this. History will judge us. There will be people that will say in 100 years, you know, if I were alive then, I would have stopped abortion. I can't believe these people were monsters, and I'm not a monster like that. Just like we now say, if I were alive during the slave trade, I would have stopped it because those people were monsters, and I'm not a monster. And yet we refuse to look at the numbers that there are more slaves today than all of the English slave trade combined. All 400 years combined, more slaves today, but we're not doing anything about it. We just have to look at these issues, because once you really look at it, and once you have to say out loud, yes, that is a baby, then the next thing you have to look at is, do we kill it or not? Humanity is going to realize what an atrocity this is. And that realization will serve as a gruesome blemish on our history. I pray that we open our eyes sooner rather than later.
It's Tuesday, January 30th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
All right. Speaker Paul Ryan has just held a press conference. He was asked about the Republican memo that Congress voted to release last night. Here's what he said.
Point number three. There may have been malfeasance by people at the FBI.
And was it
poison? Let me finish my points. There may have been malfeasance at the FBI by certain individuals. So it is our job in conducting transparent oversight of the executive branch to get to the bottom of that. Sunshine is the best disinfectant. And so what we want is all of this information to come out so that transparency can reign supreme and accountability can occur.
My only problem with this is I completely agree. I completely agree with what he said, except that's why we want this to come out. No, if you are doing a murder trial, you don't necessarily bring out half of the facts in the middle, because that maybe some of your sources, maybe some of the leads dry up because, oh crap, they're onto us. You don't do that. And that's the biggest problem that I have with this is, why are we doing this? I don't want to win. I want this problem solved. I want to know what the truth is, and I want the bad guys, and I don't care who they are. I want them to go to jail. I personally believe, a lot of people don't, I personally believe there's a real problem in the Justice Department. And it doesn't come as a surprise to anybody who didn't wholly trust Eric Holder. Are you telling me that the Justice Department was left in the same condition that he found it in? And what was the condition he found it in? Why do we accept that this kind of corruption was not only done, but done at vast levels in the 1970s under Nixon, but now suddenly we don't really have to look into any of this because it could never happen? Of course, it already has happened. It will happen again over and over again the minute we start to trust everyone and say, you know what? We're not really looking. People go corrupt. That's just the way it is. I don't want the details now because I need them. What good is this going to do? Because here's what's going to happen. Let's say that there's testimony in this document that there was malfeasance, which can you define? Because nobody ever says, you know, my friend, boy, there's some malfeasance going on there. That's a legal term.
Right. So definition of malfeasance: intentional conduct that is wrongful or unlawful, especially by officials or public employees. So that's a pretty direct charge there.
Okay, so but no, it's not. It's not. He says there's malfeasance, which is wrongful or unlawful. Well, I want to know what the wrongful stuff is,
right?
But the wrongful stuff does not lead to an indictment and people going to jail.
It might.
It could. The unlawful definitely does.
Because there's sort of a scale here. There is misfeasance, which is conduct that is lawful but inappropriate. So you're on the right side of the law, but you did something you shouldn't have done.
Okay.
Then there is nonfeasance, which is failure to act where there was a duty to act. So you didn't step in when you should have. Okay. Then there's malfeasance, which is intentional, which is pretty big word. Conduct that is wrongful or unlawful.
It kind of goes against the general description. When you get down to it, there's first degree, second degree, third degree.
Right.
You know, it's not good.
I think you're right in that there's still a little wiggle room built into that. However, it is, you know, it's a fairly serious charge if he's using the legal definition. Now, he could just be using it as a word and we don't know, but it seems intentional.
And he used the word may have been malfeasance. Okay. Let's find out if there is. This document being released now, what does it do? I can tell you that there are many conservatives that are very concerned. It actually forces the people that they were working with to get information on the FBI and on Russia and everything else. It will force them back into the dark because they're not going to, I don't want to talk about this. So by releasing this, it could hurt the investigation. It could also hurt any kind of legal proceedings going forward. That's not good.
Yeah, it's not good.
Hang on just a sec. For what purpose, Stu? I think it's just so we can have an arguing point.
Right. And there's a pushback point. I think that's where it comes from, right? You want to be, you know, people have been beating up the administration on Russia for all this time. Republicans have pushed back and said there's been some questionable activity at the FBI and these other organizations, and here's some supporting evidence for it. I think that's the basic. There's no other reason. I mean, we do need to hear it eventually, but there's no reason we need to hear it in the middle of the investigation.
I'm just trying to think of it now from the Republican point of view. If you're looking at from purely political,
right. We have 2018 coming up.
Yeah, I understand it. And if you don't offer any kind of defense, if you're just quiet, it's not going
to
help.
You have
and
to
this
do
thing's
that.
Going to go on for another 2 years.
You're probably right. That's sort of a big point, and I guess I can understand that. We should also point out, because obviously we have a lot of friends in Washington or anywhere.
I was going to say, I don't know if we have any friends in Washington.
But it's important to note, I think, for the audience who might think, okay, oh, those guys are anti-Trump. Of course, they're hearing from conservatives and Republicans.
No. We're hearing
from... These people that we've heard from are pro-Trump people.
Yeah.
They just don't like... They're concerned about this investigation. And
because they do believe, as I do, there is something there.
Right.
There is there. Now, the press is saying there's not. I believe there is, but we won't know. And anything that hurts that investigation in the long term is we shouldn't be doing.
Because the underlying point here is more important than the political squabble that will play out even to the election. the idea that, you know, we have the second most powerful or third most powerful country in the world who has conducted what I would say are acts of war against this country. This is not something you normally get away with. You're influencing and trying to manipulate another country's election. This entire investigation, and
if we had this on the Soviet Union when I was growing up, God. Reagan would have, he might have gone to war over this.
It's that big.
It would have been a very scary period.
Add into that, again, even if you don't care about the Russia part, which is hard for me to understand because this is not, it's not an anti-Trump thing. Again, political nonsense has brought that into, is Trump bad or good? Which is not the question I want answered. The question I want answered is about what Russia did exactly and how do we stop it. But the same thing applies to the FBI. Again, this comes down to is the FBI good or bad, or is Trump good or bad? And again, that's all sort of a distraction. We all know that there are a lot of people in the FBI who are good. There are a lot of people in the intelligence community that are good. But if we have a problem that is a little bit above a couple of bad apples who are acting with their own political sort of ideology and letting that affect their work, it's a huge problem.
It's a huge problem. And it will affect you eventually.
Exactly. And it's important.
It's so frustrating because, for instance, the FISA memo. All right. I don't believe in secret courts. I just don't believe that we should have a FISA court. I'm sorry. No secret courts. It's extra constitutional. It's outside of the Constitution. You don't do it.
How would you investigate something?
Exactly the way we do all of it. You go to a court and you're quiet about it, and you don't have to have the newspaper there. Mm-hmm. You know, we did it with John Gotti. It wasn't in the paper.
Happens all the time.
Criminal law. Right. You go, but you what FISA was, I need extra latitude. So the standards are lower, and it's all secret. I don't believe in the FISA court at all. With that being said, what we're talking about here is what evidence did they give the FISA court? And what did they do with it? If the FBI went and took a dossier, which they're used to seeing, and they took it from Steele, and they look at it and they say, holy cow, look at these charges. That, of course, happened. Now, did someone at the FBI say, wait a minute. Where did he get this? Well, he got it from Steele. He's a former MI6. He's worked with us before. He's very buttoned up. Okay, great. Where did he get this information? Specifically, this one, and this one. Where did he get those? Chase down his sources. Talk to him. Well, I don't know. I mean, Director, if this is going on, he's going to be the president in 4 months. Great. I'll talk to FISA, and I will tell them that we need to act because we think this is a trusted source, and we now, because of the Patriot Act, have that ability to just go, we think it's a trusted source. We need to make sure that there is no connection to Russia for the next president of the United States, or that he's not being set up and going to be blackmailed. We need to protect the president of the United States. One way or another, we have to act on this information. But at the same time, track all this down. Find out, because we are already doing investigations on Russia, and I have a feeling all of this came from Russia. So this may also be evidence that Russia is doing everything they can to destroy our election process. If they had that conversation, is that wrong? If the Muslim Brotherhood brought George Bush information, which he did, you know, on September 8th, and said Al-Qaeda is going to blow up the World Trade Center, would you say, well, we can't use that information because it was all funded by Muslim Brotherhood? Now, if we went on a jihad ourselves on September 9th and we said, we're going to get Al-Qaeda, we're going to wiretap them, because we know they're going to take down the World Trade Center, that would be wholly irresponsible. They should do both. They should immediately do everything they can to follow that information to find out it's right, because it's coming from the Muslim Brotherhood. But there's also pressure. It's September 11th is go date. Also, wiretap. Listen, find out. Is there anything we can do to stop this? Find out if it's true. But on the other hand, proceed as if it is, because we have a time pressure. That's totally reasonable.
It's reasonable, but dangerous, because
very dangerous. When you have, why it, so you shouldn't have the Patriot Act in the first place.
Yeah, it's dangerous because it sets, if that precedent is okay, the idea that a sitting president with all that power can utilize it based on essentially opposition research is very concerning. Because, I love that the Democrats don't see any problem with this, because if you're allowed to do this as president, what do you think Trump's going to do? Right? Like, I'm saying from a Democrat perspective, if you are, you think Trump is, again, this evil fascist that wants to just, who hates every race and is the worst person in the world. Well, if you believe that, why on earth would you want this to be a power that the president had? I mean, because in your mind, surely Donald Trump is going to use these tools the same way or worse than Barack Obama did. So you better find out what these things are and stop that power before it's able to be utilized by your enemies.
As I said earlier today, justice must be blind. It might be under the executive branch, but it cannot be a tool of the executive branch, no matter who the executive is. Homeowners are refinancing in droves. According to a recent Insight report, mortgage refinances accounted for 40% of all the closed loans in December. 40%. Why are people doing that? Most likely because of the passage of tax reform, which will change mortgage interest deduction limits for many homeowners. Are you getting the best value out of your home? Have you looked at what is happening with all the repatriation of cash? You look at the repatriation of all this cash because of the corporate tax rates. About $2.6 trillion is coming flooding back into the market. What do you think that's going to do with interest rates? There's an easy way for you to find out, and all you have to do is call the salary-based mortgage consultants at American Financing. Great time to start shopping the rates right now, because interest rates are going up, possibly four times this year. American Financing, call them now, 800-906-2440. If you have an adjustable, you need to do this now, 800-906-2440. AmericanFinancing.net, call them now, AmericanFinancing.net, 800-906-2440.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. Glenn Beck.
So, news for the Cleveland Indians. I mean, not the team, but the Indians in Cleveland. They're going to be very, very happy because the offensive Cleveland Indian logo is going away.
Yeah, Chief Wahoo. Mm-hmm. No longer going to be on the uniforms of the Cleveland Indians starting in 2019. Mm. So it's going to take, they're going to take a year.
So I haven't really heard about the big Indian protests on this.
Yeah, I mean, like it was a cartoon that was going to draw a big smiley face to Indian.
No, I'm aware of it, mm-hmm. But I'm not aware of the big Indian or Native American pushback.
There's some activists that don't like it.
There's some activists.
But no, I would say there isn't one.
I mean, you know what this is? This is, I mean, you talk about the arrogance. Oh, they're just, they're too small and they're too stupid to even know that they're being mocked. And we have to take this off because they're just too stupid, or I don't know what it is, but they won't say anything. And so we have to protect them. It's so arrogant.
Can I ask a journalist question as well here?
Yeah.
I know you're not a journalist, but
yeah, I play one.
We should do this on the other side because I'm interested in the way the New York Times wrote this up. I don't think I've ever seen the New York Times use language like this.
I'm interested. They're writing like conservatives? I can't imagine. Next.
Glenn Beck, Mercury. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Yeah, real quick on the Cleveland Indians. Here's what the New York Times wrote as they get rid of their mascot on the uniforms.
Yeah, maybe this is minor, but it just reads really strangely to me. This is their last paragraph of the New York Times story on the Cleveland Indians abandoning the Chief Wahoo logo next year. I don't know why that makes me laugh. Okay. The Indians team name. Now, we remember this with the Redskins. The Redskins team name, 100% verifiable fact, was named after their coach who was Native American to honor him.
Yeah.
Period. There's no disagreement about that. People have said later on, oh, well, it turned into a negative phrase, Redskins.
Well,
yeah,
but that's not what he is like, you know. Well, George Washington turned into a bad name. Well, yeah, but it's not.
Right, exactly. That's not the intent. Right. So here's what they say. The Indians team name itself is supposedly derived from a member of a Native American tribe in Maine who played for a different Cleveland team in the National League from 1897 to 1899. Now, you're the New York Times, and you're writing a story about the Indians logo, and you include this name, this paragraph at the end. The Indians team name itself is supposedly derived? Like, isn't it your job as a journalist to say it either is derived from that or it isn't?
Yeah, but
or it's a claim from the team that is unverified, right? Like, it's supposedly adds a little bit of like, we don't believe them. We want to make clear that you know that supposedly
you said
in this mythology.
You said you couldn't believe this from the New York Times. That's what threw me off. I thought maybe the new, you saw, I've never seen this from the New York Times. I've seen that every day. I was thinking like, you know what? Reagan might have been a pretty good guy.
Yeah. And they came out for tax cuts at the end of the article.
You know, that whole tax cut thing, that trickle-down economics, looks like proof is in the pudding here. Yeah. It's working. So,
Pat, Pat Gray's with us. What do you think about the name change, the loss of Chief Wahoo? From
it could, I think, be construed as offensive.
Really?
Yes.
It could be.
Very cartoonish. I don't know that it is, though.
It could be. Thank you.
I don't know that it is.
Is this the big white man stepping up and saying, oh, you know, these Indians who are not protesting, they're just too stupid to know this is offensive, so I'm going to do it for them. Yeah. I mean, it's insulting.
A bunch of white liberals being offended on their behalf.
Yes, it's insulting.
They're not offended on their own behalf.
Right.
They've done study after study, and it comes out about 90% of Native Americans aren't offended by that stuff.
Right.
So
what are we doing?
What are we worried about?
Yeah, you're imposing your white man justice.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really, it's incredible. Mm-hmm. Incredible.
It's actually insulting, I think, to minorities.
Oh, I think it's very insulting. Very insulting. You excited for the State of the Union?
I can't wait.
Right.
I can't wait.
Really?
Yeah.
I can't wait. You know, Kiefer Sutherland is not showing up. Now, I didn't know he was supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
But he's not showing up.
Well, he's not showing up because he's the designated survivor. He has to stay away from the State of the Union.
Now, this is a TV show.
It's ridiculous. Well, of course he's not going there, Glenn, moron. Yeah. Jeez. Mr. Educated talk show host over here doesn't know that Kiefer Sutherland can't be at the State of the Union.
I am so sick of who's invited and who's not and who's showing up. And mm-hmm. I just...
What you're going to wear... We're going to wear a pink ribbon. We're going to wear blue shoes. I mean, who cares? It's just, who cares about all of that?
I want to point out, joining us here is a little Sally Muckafutch, who's no more than three, and she has no eyes and no mouth, and she doesn't have a nose. So she can't see, smell, speak, quite honestly, breathe. Until her neighbor, coincidentally, a waiter from California, offered her a straw and just jammed it into her face. And it saved her life. And that's why we wanted little Sally stand up and Bill, whatever his name is, from the TGI Fridays. He's here as well. And then they applaud for 5 minutes. And it's I'm tired of it. I just shut up. All of you, shut up.
Is Bill from TGI Fridays really going to be there? Because that sounds great.
Yeah, it wasn't a paper straw.
He saved her life.
He saved her life. He just saved jammed her life.
Just straight into her face, right? Because there was no opening there.
Right. So he could tell by the look of her skin that she was like...
Suffocating.
No.
No.
No, he did it out of anger.
Oh, okay.
I mean, this is a story they're not going to tell you, okay? Because it's the Republicans. But he did it out of anger because he could tell that if she had eyes, she was looking at him like, where's my drink? Wow. And he knew my drink. I've already put it here in front of you, but you don't have eyes. And so he got mad. He took that straw and he just jammed it in her face. Now, they're thinking about not giving him the fine because, you're fined $1,000, you know, if you give a straw to somebody that didn't request it. Uh-huh. But she had no mouth. And quite honestly, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals said she deserved it.
Yeah, law's a law, though. Okay. You can't give anybody a straw, even if they have no mouth.
Right.
And that's the law, so, right? I mean, are we a society of laws or men?
Children without faces, you just don't care.
How are you looking at this State of the Union?
So I'm trying to assess. I'm sort of weighing the good from the first year of Trump with the concerns that I have. And I'm right now, I think the good outweighs the bad. With the things we've talked about a lot of times, like Supreme Court Justice, mm-hmm. Neil Gorsuch, got the tax cuts, which have definitely stimulated the economy and helped employees. He rolled back the EPA regulations. He got us out of the Paris Accord and the TPP treaty, gave land back to states. And I think you could say actually finished off ISIS pretty much.
Oh, no, yeah. You don't say it. He did it.
He did.
He did it.
He's a big one.
He's generally changed the way the administration deals with the military. And he's added definitely. Respect back
yeah, definitely.
To the military, which is a huge thing to
and me. And he's elevated, you know, a lot of military people to real levels of prominence and influence in yeah. the administration, which, yeah. you know, can be risky if you do it too much. But, I mean, I think he's done it an appropriate amount.
The Jerusalem thing. You've huge. Got opening up drilling on Anwar. That'll be mm-hmm. big for America's energy independence. And then you weigh that against the concerns that the push for amnesty, which I'm not excited about. The fact that we don't have a wall yet or provisions to build it. The libel laws he wants to open up and the risk to free speech. There's been no repeal of Obamacare yet. The character issues are a concern to me, but not apparently to evangelical leaders. So what is the state of our union right now? Is it solid? Are we on solid footing? Or do the concerns outweigh?
You have to look, too, at a couple of things. The $787 billion stimulus package, which was outrageous last president.
Now it's double that.
It's double that. Double.
Or more.
It might be as high as 1.7.
Is that going to be a good thing to the pundits now? Are they going to say, well, yeah, now it's good?
That's not good.
They're just not calling it a stimulus package. They're saying it's for infrastructure.
But that's what it was. It was an infrastructure stimulus package.
Yeah. What happened to that $800 right. billion?
Well, Joe Biden was all over it. Joe Biden was all over it.
He made all those signs, if you remember.
Yeah, I do remember.
Those are nice. Yeah, those are really nice signs.
So, I mean, you know, we have that. We also have this really disturbing news that came out, and thank God Jeet Pai stomped this down yesterday quickly. The chairman of the FCC
nationalizing the 5G
network. 5G
network. Jeez.
That is to come out and have the president say, you know what, we think we should build the 5G network and private industry will just rent the backbone of a 5G network from us is terrifying. Really not good. Really not good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an interesting mm-hmm. thing of I'm concerned a little bit about how. You know, Trump always, we always said Trump would have better policies over a 4-year period than any, you know, certainly Hillary Clinton, right? Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, of yes. course, the question is long term, and that's going to be up for debate for the next couple decades, right? Of what happens to the party and what they begin to support. If they turn into that nationalist party, it's no matter how many good things he does in this term, it's a very negative thing because then there's no conservative representation. But he always had a bunch of policies, even in the campaign, that were. He proposed and said that he was going to do and that we liked.
Yeah.
And there was a big bucket of policies that we didn't like. And what it seems like is the first year he
went into that
passive least resistance has taken and done many of the things you mentioned, Pat, which were good and that we supported. And mm-hmm. as we start year two, we're getting infrastructure. We're getting, DACA, mm-hmm. we're getting path to citizenship. Yep. We're getting a lot of proposals here that were the ones that we were skeptical of and did not like back in the day. So hopefully this isn't a split where we're seeing the policy turned down. I mean, I kind of like Ben Shapiro's construct of this when he was talking about it the other day when he was here, which was an A- for executive policy, which almost everything you mentioned there, Pat, was an executive
policy.
Which could be reversed. None of it was legislative.
Yeah, it could all be reversed.
The only thing legislative except for the was the tax plan. And that's he gave him a C- on legislative priorities, and then everything else an F, which is, you know, the stuff that you talked about when it's character, it's the office, it's
so
which I, you know, that is it's an interesting split, and I think generally speaking how I see it. Like he's done a lot of good things. He's definitely been better on policy than I thought he was going to be.
No
definitely.
Doubt.
So, that's a huge thing.
I had a friend who supports Trump reach out to me. He's in politics, and he said, I understand, Glenn, but the, you know, the evangelicals are playing this really smart. They are making all of their support. I think it hurts them in the long run, but they're playing very smart, and they're giving him support. And clearly saying the minute he starts going the other direction, we're done. And he said, so he is being held on a short leash, which is good. This is a supporter, by the way. He said, the question is, in the last 4 years, will there be a leash on him at all? Will he care about the left or the right or politics? And some could look at that and say, that's really good because now he really doesn't care. He doesn't have to be elected again. But that's where, you know, presidents usually become a little more bold is in the second term. What happens in the second term? Who's he going to listen to? Who's going to temper him? Who's going to help him find a path? Because I don't mean this in a bad way. I don't think he has thought things like the 5G network through or even the Patriot Act. You know, his first in the Patriot Act, his first gut reaction was right. This FISA, this is what they used against me. This should be gone. 2 hours later, somebody sat down and explained it to him. And he was saying, you know what? This is great. This is American. We need it. So it really depends on who he's listening to, who he wants to. I don't mean this in a bad way, but pay off. Who's helped him? That it can advise him, and he wants to help them back. That's a question mark. What does that mean for the policies going forward? It's going to be a really interesting year and interesting State of the Union address without Kiefer Sutherland. So he won't.
Right. Yeah. Are we sure he's positive?
No.
He's
not gonna be? Designated survivor.
How many? It's a TV show.
He has to be separate from everybody else because he's the person who becomes president in this situation.
If anything really bad happens.
If Kiefer Sutherland is the American president, I think a lot would really be bad. Very bad.
Probably be very bad. You're going to talk about this on Pat Gray Unleashed today?
Yes.
This is the big topic du jour.
Right. Moments from now.
All right. Very excited to hear it. And you can hear it as well on the Blaze Radio and TV network, as well as on iTunes. With the podcast, if you miss it, you can always catch up later in the day.
I also sent out a smoke signal.
Is that what that was?
About 3 o'clock Eastern,
Okay.
Yeah. Just sums up the whole show in a smoke signal, if you want to wait until then.
You probably should make it longer than that. It was just,
really?
Yeah, it was about 7 seconds of smoke.
Smoke signals say a lot.
They do.
In a very little amount of time.
Sure. It's a fair point.
He was telling the Chief Wahoo that he's going to be talking about him tonight. Is that you, racist? With volatility in the stock market, the wild swings in Bitcoin, the constant turmoil in Washington, D.C., I don't know if you know this, but gold just came off its second best year since 2010, and gold is up almost $100 since mid-December with lots of room to run. And I will tell you, we did an episode, what was it, last week, Stu? On the melt up and why you need to be concerned about the economy. We're all feeling pretty good right now. We're all feeling like, okay, this is going to be great. The problem is there's a lot of repatriation of money coming back. The market could overheat easily. I think the stock markets are going to go through the roof. It's called a melt up. The last time it really happened was, I think it was the pets.com. Before that, it was 1929. It's when people get over exuberant and they're like, this is great. It's never going to end. And the stock market goes through the roof and everybody jumps in. It's kind of like what was happening with Bitcoin for a while, except this one would be devastating to the global economy. So what are they doing? They are starting to raise interest rates to bring and suck some of that money back into the Federal Reserve. What does that mean? when interest rates go up, and that's because there's too many dollars chasing too few goods, which means inflation. Gold Line has gold that is the hedge against inflation. I don't buy it as an investment. I buy it as an insurance policy against insanity, and the world has gone insane. Find out how you can protect your family with Goldline. 1-866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-465-3546. Make sure you read their important risk information to find out if buying gold or silver is right for you. But I'm telling you, gold is going to have a good run. You have to do your own homework, please. I'm not an investment person. But gold is going to go up, I believe, this year because of inflation and all these dollars being repatriated and Wall Street. Protect yourself and your family. 866-GOLDLINE. 1-866-GOLDLINE or goldline.com.
Glenn Beck. Mercury. Glenn Beck.
I just have to pass this on, and I'll post this at glennbeck.com right after the show. A couple was driving down the street, and they were in Spain, and the woman was kind of, you know, real close to, you know, the man who was driving, and they thought that was a little weird. What's going on there? So they pulled over, and as they pulled them over, they said, "Could you step out of the car?" And the couple will we'd rather not open the doors. They open up the doors, and oranges fell out. And then the police realized there were
hundreds of oranges,
and the couple had robbed an orange truck, a shipment of oranges. But they actually said to the officer, "You know what? We're just on a long trip, and we've been picking them along the way, and it's just added up."
Glenn Beck.
Solid answer.
Mercury.